Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks, the People's Parliament edition for this Tuesday, May 1st, 2018. Today, the focus is on corruption in Barbados, and we have invited, as usual, the political parties contesting the upcoming May 24th general elections in Barbados. Let me say at the outset that on every occasion that we have mounted this program, we have invited the ruling Democratic Labour Party to send a representative. I can go as far as to say to you that we made a special effort to ensure that we got their buy-in to this concept. Unfortunately, on many an occasion, they have not had a representative here. A few days ago, I called the General Secretary and reminded him of this program, and he indicated to me that it was likely that he would have the Attorney General of Barbados, Mr. Adriel Brathwaite, attending this session of the People's Parliament. I await Mr. Brathwaite's arrival or that of some other representative of the Democratic Labour Party. In the meantime, I have here in the studio already Dale Marshall, who is from the Barbados Labour Party. He says he'll be here until 12 o'clock. Grenville Phillips Jr. of Solutions Barbados. We expect to be joined sometime during the program by Attorney at Law Maria Phillips for the UPP. But we also have some people who have been very concerned about this whole question of corruption and integrity in Barbados. Some Barbadians who are part of a group called Integrity Group Barbados. One will be in the studio with us, and some will be on the telephone. Two others will be on the telephone, and they will basically set the stage for today's program. But why are we discussing corruption in Barbados today? Let's take you to a recent panel discussion which took place at the IMF spring meetings.
Corruption is a serious and pervasive problem throughout the world. By some estimates, bribery alone costs 2% of global GDP. And just consider the headlines from the last year. We have seen the heads of government in Brazil, South Korea, South Africa, Peru, either forced out of office or prohibited from running for office because of corruption.
IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde.
In addition to the moral aspect of it, in addition to the poverty aspect of it, there is also a fiscal dimension that obviously finance ministers should be concerned about. First of all, it's if there is, I'm not passing judgment on the reality of corruption, although I have my own views, but even if you assume that it's only a perception that corruption, it weakens the ability of authorities to actually raise and collect taxation. Because if taxpayers assume that some of the money is going to be diverted to unknown, quote-unquote, corrupt causes, then their willingness to pay, this sort of social contract that there is between citizens and the state, is broken. So that's number one. Number two, that's on the revenue raising side. If you look at the revenue spending side, then clearly when there is corruption, generally it means that fiscal revenue is spent in a non-transparent, certainly non-disclosed, and obscure way that doesn't benefit the purpose for which it was intended. And that's how you find those inflated budget, those little kickback here, there, or offshore. And obviously, that spending is poorly spent. Okay? The third dimension is that it also reduces the prospect of people to actually comply with the rules, whether they are of a fiscal nature or otherwise. Because if they believe that people are going to get to where they want to get without actually complying, but simply by participating in the corruption schemes, then clearly they're not going to comply. So those are three dimensions that clearly matter for us at the IMF. I would add a fourth one, which may have to do with the cure as much as with the disease. And that's the issue of the fiscal landscape within which people operate. We've done work at the IMF where we clearly demonstrate that the more complicated the rules, the more detailed, intricate and obscure they are, the more corruption is likely to prosper and the less growth will be there, the less investors will be engaged and active, and that's another dimension which has big economic ramifications.
Now, that's Christine Lagarde of the International Monetary Fund establishing a link between corruption and economic prosperity across the world. From Integrity Group Barbados, we have Chantal Monroe Knight, who is with us in the studio. And on the telephone, we have Auditor Crystal Howell and businessman Andy Armstrong. Now, the three of you have been involved in this effort to raise consciousness about corruption and try to get some kind of movement on this matter. In the period that you have been involved in this effort, what have you seen? Chantal Monroe Knight.
Thanks so much. In terms of what we have seen, I think that there is a level of concern among Barbadians, among the citizenry, around this issue of corruption. And I think that was borne out in the recently released study that was done by Dr. Dwayne Devenish, where he showed that Barbadians generally feel that our system of governance is one that is held, or one that shows a high level of a perception of corruption among citizens. And I think that this is something that for us in the IGB, that we are committed, one, to raising awareness of the issue of corruption and its impact. I think as the Christine Lagarde was clearly showing the economic impact, but also as well how it suggests that citizens cannot trust our political system, cannot trust our system of governance. And we believe that that is something that is extremely dangerous, because our system has to be one that is seen as being fair, and fair for everyone across the border. And it is this lack of trust that is really coming across to us as well. And I think the other thing that is clear as well, David, and for the listening public as well, is that while we talk about the issue of corruption, where we talk about the issue of integrity, people are no longer convinced that there is necessarily a commitment to ensuring that we tackle it effectively. And again, I think that is something important that our governance system has to pay attention to, that people have faith not only in the system, but have faith that something will be done about it, because we hear on the ground very much this belief by people that the system is extremely corrupt.
Andy Armstrong and Crystal Howell, what are the specific areas that you see as being in need of action in this regard?
Yeah. Hi, David. Andy here. You want me to go first?
Yes.
Okay. Morning, David, and morning, Barbados. So, picking up on what Chantal said, in the Devenish study as well, 19% of voters admitted they had been offered a bribe. And even more concern is that 26% said they would like to be offered a bribe because they would take it. I think that's a very sad commentary on Barbados. And I know when we started our movement, I would speak to a lot of people and they would say, well, it's very well-meaning what you're doing, but unfortunately, the situation is too far gone. Corruption is too entrenched and there's nothing we can do about it. I get the sense now that people are starting to believe that, okay, it's going to take a long time, but we can make a change. We can change the culture. We can become more transparent and accountable. Last October, I was in Trinidad for their transparency conference. One of the speakers was the Secretary General of Transparency International in Norway. And Norway always ranks in the top five for being the least corrupt countries in the world. And she said, in Norway, we trust our politicians. And she got the biggest laugh of the conference. because none of us in the Caribbean could really relate to that concept. But she was absolutely genuine. In Norway, we trust our politicians. And we would like to get to the situation where in Barbados we could honestly say we trust our politicians.
Crystal Howell, the specifics of how you believe we can get and develop that kind of trust? What are the areas that call for specific action now?
Good morning to everyone, and thanks for having me on panel. The main area of concern is that there's a lack of legislation in place for you to even get to the point of investigating whether the allegations of corruption are true or not. There is a widespread feeling across Barbados. You do have the survey, yes, but if you ask persons in general how they feel about politicians, the word that is usually associated with it is corrupt. And that is unfortunate because it deters persons who may have ambitions to go in and make a difference in the political landscape from entering into the field because they're fearful that their reputations may be associated with corruption. And the unfortunate part is because there's a lack of legislation, you do not have the means to be able to say, okay, we're going to do an investigation, follow the letter of the legislation to carry this out, and be able to present our findings in a way that will help persons to be able to say definitively whether it exists or not. So the first thing to get in place is that legislation, and it does not end there. It's actually the beginning. It's the start, because it is going to take an entire cultural shift for persons, both politicians, private enterprises, the citizens of this country, to come to a place where they believe the investigations have not been tampered with, where they are okay with the findings and results. And even if you do find something of significance, knowing that there's some kind of action that will take place to make sure it's corrected. Because it's one thing, even if you found that the allegations are correct, we have a problem in Barbados where sometimes these things still get brushed under the carpet and persons of prominence are not made to pay for whatever has been found against them. So it's going to take an entire cultural shift, and it's not one that I expect to happen in my lifetime. But if you do not start, you will never get there, and you will never get to a place where persons can be like Norway and say they trust their politicians. And I think if politicians really cared about the positions they take up, they would want their citizens to be proud of them as opposed to afraid of them.
Okay, well, that brings us now to the politicians among us. And in as much as the ruling Democratic Labour Party is not yet represented, if they will indeed be represented at all, there's still a space here for them if they so desire, or they can call on the telephone. It brings me to one of the people who has been in politics for quite a while, and that is Dale Marshall. Now, the reason why we're discussing this issue has a lot to do with the fact that previous administrations have failed or refused to put legislation in place that could reduce a lot of the anxiety that currently exists. Indeed, reference is made to one of the politicians speaking in the last parliament who said that it was a minister at the time. He said he didn't feel elected members of parliament should declare their assets to the world. And when you start to dig down into why politicians are reluctant, you go on the platform and you promise this and you promise that. But when you're elected, you find a good reason to say, you know, my business is my business. Talk to us about that aspect of it. We, who are non-politicians, see it one way, but it seems as though politicians have a completely different perspective on it here in Barbados. How do you see us moving forward there?
Thank you, David, and good morning to listeners. I think I have to admit at the outset that the reason why there's the perception of corruption among politicians rests entirely on the shoulders of the political class. But that brings with it the responsibility to turn things around. Now, it is true that we often say that we will do things and then seem not to follow through. The time for that, in my view, has passed. The Barbadian electorate now is infinitely more educated and more knowledgeable about things than perhaps in the 1950s and 60s, when politicians were held in a fair degree of awe. In those days, everybody had confidence in Errol Barr and confidence in Tom Adams and all those people. That time has passed. My constituents are well-educated. They have access to social media. In fact, they check social media first thing in the mornings when they wake up and last thing at night. We can't have brought our population this far and expect them then to look aside when issues present themselves. Corruption in public life in Barbados is not an imaginary specter. It exists. It is a dual issue because the political class facilitates the corruption and the private sector benefits from it. So I'd like to begin not as an excuse in any way, but to say to the listeners that this is a sword that must cut both ways.
Isn't that influenced to a large extent by how many seats you have in Parliament, the extent to which you may be in a tenuous situation? And if you have people in Parliament who are worried about how much the public will know about their private business, then that has a bearing on whether you can push the envelope in the way that you are putting it to us. You are saying, oh, but the world has changed. Yes, it has, but people haven't changed.
Well, you know, Barbadians are driven by a lot of cultural norms, and so privacy is one of them. Now, let me relate this to the discussion. And I don't think it really has a lot to do with how many seats you have in Parliament. Corruption is about dishonesty, and dishonesty is about people. And that will exist whether you have a tenuous majority or whether you have a bigger majority. While a tenuous majority may cause you to do more, perhaps it could be argued that a bigger majority may make you feel that you can do what you like. Now, when this issue of anti-corruption legislation came up first, well, not first, but was brought to the fore in 2008, it came up because David Thompson said, I am going to pass integrity legislation within 100 days. We know the sad history. It took many more years, and now a decade later, we still don't have it. But one of the issues related to privacy that came up is the fact that as long as you enact integrity legislation, people who fall within that class will simply have to allow the barricade of privacy to be brought down. And therefore, chairmen of boards, judges, and a whole class of Barbadians who politicians like me encourage to come and support public life will find that their assets are exposed. Now, I can say to you that, and I don't think there's any politician who has not encountered it, people have said, I'm happy to serve on the statutory board, but Mr. Marshall, I do not intend to let people know what I own. This means that they don't not only trust the politicians, they don't trust the system. Any integrity legislation will require a strong and trustworthy integrity commission. And Barbadians have to be satisfied that so long as they declare their assets, that that information is going to be kept absolutely private, and that a neighbor will not be able to put on Facebook, hey, you know what, here, he got a house in Sandy Lane. Now, I'd like to say we absolutely need integrity legislation. It is an embarrassment that we've had a piece that has gone to Parliament, and it is still not enacted. It is still not proclaimed. My party has committed to putting a new piece of legislation in place in very short order. We have drafted it. We've put it out to the public and asked for consultation. Integrity Barbados has said to us that there are some issues with it, and I welcome that feedback. We've had a lot of Barbadians who've called in, who've sent in notes and so on. It is something that we are committed to, but we recognize that we have to satisfy Barbadians that their information will be absolutely private. But I'll pause and come back.
I'm coming to the UPP next, but to set the record straight, I'm going to quote from Sir David Simmons, who said at a lecture last year, it is a strange coincidence that before the 1976 general elections in Barbados, the then government hastily prepared integrity legislation, but never ensured that it passed Parliament and reached the statute books. Similarly, before the 2013 general elections, the Prevention of Corruption Act was passed, but for 5 years, it too has not been brought into force. So 1976, the Barbados Labour Party was in office, and in 2013, it was the Democratic Labour Party.
Now, so David said before 1976.
I don't think he said before 1976.
I thought that's what you said. Well, perhaps you said, just like to check.
It said it's before the 1976 general elections.
Okay, so perhaps the coincidence is clear.
But the truth of the matter is that even if it happened before, two Barbados Labour Party administrations would have had the opportunity to do something about this.
And we did not.
And did not.
Correct.
And therein lies the skepticism and the concern that Barbadians have been raising. And there is indeed a perception that the situation has gotten worse based upon, if you just go on the survey, which was done by Devenish. Now, Maria Phillips of the United Progressive Party is one of the parties that has never been in office. It is easy to come and tell us what you will do too. But what more do we have to go on from your party as it relates to this issue?
Good morning to all listeners. Thank you, Mr. Ellis, for having me. I share the concerns of the Barbados Integrity Group and the other NGOs. I think that is a good thing to have. And I think we as the United Progressive Party, we are very strong on development of the NGOs, civil society, because they have a big part to play in advocating not only for the rights of citizens, but as a neutral and objective voice in ensuring that integrity in governments is maintained. And as far as the United Progressive Party is concerned, yes, integrity legislation is a very necessary thing. But what we also have noticed is that there are a number of structures that are part of what would be called the national integrity system that need to be strengthened. And
such as,
for example, the Auditor General, such as, for example, the Public Accounts Committee, such as we've looked at increasing the capacity of some of these structures. We've also had some offices, for example, the Ombudsman. So there are a number of offices that help in keeping transparency in government and in governance. And what we've seen is that the political parties over the years have not taken these seriously. They have not, one, followed the mandates of certain rules, secondly, they have not sought to increase the capacity of these offices in such a way that they can function and function effectively. And even though integrity legislation is necessary, what we want to see, and sometimes as a government and governments, they do this, they rush to pass legislation.
Well, I want to get you down to some specifics here, because if you say that we need to make some changes when it comes to the Office of Auditor General and the Public Accounts Committee, tell us more specifically what needs to be done in that regard.
Particularly as it relates to the Auditor General, one of the things that the United Progressive Party wants to do is to increase the capacity of the office by providing the necessary resources. And you would have seen, I believe, in the Auditor General's recommendations in 2014, it indicated that the office itself is lacking necessary resources. One of the things we want to do as a progressive party is to ensure that he can have those resources to be able to carry out his functions effectively. I think that is very important. And that itself would assist in making sure that the office can do its job effectively. Secondly, One of the things that we've also noted is that the Auditor General highlights significant instances in which financial rules are not being followed, etc. He does an excellent job. He lays his report. He finishes his report. And at the end of the day, nothing happens. And that has been going on as long as we
So how would you change that?
What we're looking to do is to ensure the Auditor General can give his report to the or highlight instances in which need further investigation to the office of the Director of Public Prosecutions.
What's the current structure?
The current structure is that the Auditor General simply does his report and it is laid before Parliament and he does his job. That is exactly what his jurisdiction is. He's supposed to do his report, an objective report, and lays it before the Parliament. And this report also assists the Public Accounts Committee. But what we are saying is that why after he does what he's supposed to do, nothing is done. There needs to be some teeth in terms of the investigations that can be carried out to hold public officials, not just politicians, but public officials accountable for the type of malpractices that he's highlighting every year in terms of what is not being followed, etc. And we are saying somebody needs to be charged, somebody needs to be held to account. And the only way this can be done is if there is an enforcement mechanism that will help support his office. His office is not to do the enforcement. It has to be passed on to the DPP, who will do the necessary investigations and, where possible, can charge the officials.
Dale Marshall wants to come back to this.
We have this thing in Barbados that report everything to the DPP. The DPP is the Director of Public Prosecutions. The DPP does not investigate anything. So let's get that clear. The police is the enforcement arm of the laws of Barbados. So the notion that you find something which may fall far from the standards and you send a file to the DPP doesn't help. I think that transparency is key. You can't have a serious fight against corruption unless there is transparency in public life and in government finances. It is that transparency that, in fact, will help you to spot it and to eliminate it. The Auditor General's role and the Public Accounts Committee's role are important. They help in that transparency issue. But I do think that those are ancillary issues. What we need, with due respect to my colleague, what we need is legislation that is appropriate to deal with the issue of corruption. The Auditor General may find in conducting his audit that there is some discrepancy somewhere. He may find that. Is it a question of proper accounting, proper public processes, or is it a question of corruption somewhere? We don't know. But even if he finds that, to just send a file down to the police and say, please look into this for me, is really not a practical way of dealing with governance issues.
As it currently stands, it appears to us that the Auditor General's report can basically be blocked by people in Parliament who may feel that they need to keep it under wraps. That is how it appears.
Okay.
And a good example of that might be what has just happened with the Public Accounts Committee's investigation that looked at the National Housing Corporation. To this day, we are unable to publish anything about it because if you do so, then you are opening up yourselves to a certain degree of legal action. Now, I remember not so long ago, there was some other issue before the Public Accounts Committee coming out of a report from the Auditor General, and it was said that Parliament had to approve of this information going further than that. Now, notwithstanding what you have said about the importance of having legislation that is specific to dealing with the whole question of corruption, there may still be a perception that there is a need to deal with that particular hurdle where Parliament appears to be able to move in and block what it wants to block.
Well, you know, as the victim of the last blocking, I agree. But let me just be clear. The Auditor General's report then laid in Parliament is a public document. And therefore, its content is absolutely
But it has
available.
To be laid.
It has to be laid. But that is the structure. The Auditor General is a creature of statute and reports to Parliament. And therefore, his report has to be laid in Parliament.
And but if you block it, being laid?
It is laid by the government benches. Now, if the government decides not to lay it, then obviously there's a difficulty.
Well, that's the point we're making.
But even then, it would be more than passing strange for, and certainly would be completely inconsistent with our conventions, where a report is forwarded to Parliament via the minister as a result of a statutory obligation that minister chooses not to lay. Theoretically, he may not, but certainly from my experience, all Auditor General's reports are laid. Now, we had Auditor General's reports when we were in government, Auditors General reports when we were in government, and they were, in some instances, quite unflattering. I'm sure you remember some of them. But we laid them.
Yeah, but we're dealing with the fact that the system is structured in such a way that if somebody wants to avoid that, they can.
It has happened in respect of the Accounts Committee. I know of no instance, and perhaps you're dealing with what is possible rather than with what has happened. But certainly, all of the Auditor General reports have been laid. And to the extent, I mean, the last Auditor General's report I recollect, which dealt with the Ministry of Housing, and which highlighted a number of discrepancies dealing with the high-rise buildings, it was laid in Parliament. The Public Accounts Committee is one that is especially grievous, and I have great regret that a Parliament that I sat in refused to allow the report to be laid for specious reasons.
Let me get Grenville Phillips here from Solutions Barbados. I don't know if you want to comment on this specific issue here, because that, to my mind, is one of the areas that creates the skepticism and the concern. What are your thoughts on how we can move forward in this area?
Right. Just to remind everyone of the context here, because Dale Marshall is being very frank, and I really appreciate that. He's admitted that corruption exists. He has verified the perception of the Devenish report that there is corruption in Barbados. Crystal Howell is concerned that you need a cultural shift and that you will not get that in her lifetime. That is gravely concerning. However, there is good news. To Crystal and everyone out there, and even those in this studio, there is good news. Corruption will be dealt with effectively in the Solutions Barbados administration. Let's I know that down. You could easily say that.
Yeah, let's get down to the
right,
nitty-gritty now.
The nitty-gritty now. I just happen to be the first chartered structural engineer, I believe, on the planet to have ever run for elective politics. When a chartered engineer like myself engages in corruption, that's the end of their career. I don't really hate the devil. He has his work to do. You know, God told the devil to go and trouble Job, but just don't harm him. But I hate corruption. Mm. I hate corruption. I hate it with a passion. It is a destructive thing to nations. And that's why we have developed the most effective way of dealing with corruption. Not through all of these pieces of legislation that I've seen, because I've looked at the Barbados Labour Party's legislation that they had. I commented on it. It is so full of loopholes for the guilty. And similar to the Democratic Labour Party's legislation, which even former Attorney General Simmons acknowledged was full of loopholes for the guilty. this idea of keeping passing legislation just to excite people has to come to an end. So what how do we plan to do it?
What are the specifics? How do you plan to make a difference?
Right. Well, if you Google corruption and construction, and I've been in the construction industry for the past 30 years, if you Google corruption and construction, you realize that between 10 and 30% of a construction project is like a bribe worldwide.
It's true.
10 or 30. There has been evidence, and because of my position in the construction industry, there has been evidence that is up to 50% in Barbados. That's a lot of corruption. So how do we plan to deal with this? You got to really understand, with that level of corruption, a significant part of our debt, which is currently at $14 billion, a significant part of that debt, if that is true, is used to simply pay off for corruption. We may borrow $100 million, we build a $50 million asset, but the other $50 million gets spread around. So how do we plan to deal with it? In the first 3 months, we plan to allow anyone who has given or received a bribe to come and pay it back. And they'll come and pay it back. A lot of them will come. First 3 months, an amnesty of sorts. Anyone who has given or received a bribe, you come and pay it back. After 3 months, we will then enact whistleblower legislation, where the whistleblower gets as a reward the full value of the bribe. If someone gave $1 million, the whistleblower gets $1 million. However, the person who gave or received the bribe has to pay back 10 times the value of the amount. Now, we will contact every consultant and contractor who has ever worked in Barbados since independence and tell them to come and get yourself sorted out. And they will come, because if you go onto the World Bank website or the Inter-American Development website or any of these websites, you will see a section there that says blacklist. And under that, there are hundreds of consultants and contractors who cannot tender for the next 15 years. And they'll prefer to keep tendering on $100 and $200 million projects and come to Barbados and just pay off the $10 million bribe amount so that they can continue working on those projects than to be convicted and then won't be able to work on those $200 and $300 million projects. So they will come. So this, we believe, is very effective.
May I ask you this question?
Yes.
Because you locate a lot of what you said in the fact that you've been an engineer in Barbados for all these years. And
around the Caribbean.
Around the region. And you've seen a high ratio of corruption, you say, in the Barbados environment. Let me ask you, what, in your judgment, has stopped this from being exposed? And we assume that even people in the consulting field, engineers and those people, so have been involved in this as well.
No, not that I'm aware of.
That you're aware of.
Not that I'm aware of.
But they would be spotless in this regard.
It may be possible, but as I said, if a chartered engineer engages in this, that's the end of their career.
What, in your judgment, has created an environment of impunity in Barbados to that extent?
I believe it is probably this Defamation Act. Because perhaps previously you could call a thief, but with this Defamation Act that we have, you can... Let's give a hypothetical situation. You have...
But truth is a defense, as far as I know, in the Defamation Act.
Let me explain. You may see a politician and a contractor, and you decide to whip up your cell phone. And you hear the politician saying, "Well, hello, sir." And then the other fellow says, "Well, hello, here is a check for $1 million, a bribe for me to get this road job." And you hear the politician say, "Thank you for this bribe. I will make sure you get the job." And he takes the check and puts it in his pocket. All the audio and video is clear. If you reveal it, you could be charged with defamation. Okay. That's the Defamation Act. So and that's why we plan to modify that act so that truth is really a defense. Well, truth is not a defense if you can prove that it was done maliciously.
Can I get some reaction from some of the other panelists to all that you've said?
I have more to say.
Maria Phillips.
Yeah, Mr. Ellis, I actually wanted to go back to what you were talking about. Sorry to actually divert the conversation back there, but I think it is necessary. I mean, we do have systems in place, and that is something we have highlighted. There are systems in place, but they're not functioning. Now, you've highlighted the fact that the Public Accounts Committee, if you have certain majorities in Parliament, there are certain things that can be blocked. There is that, and in addition to that, you also have the issue of the fact that from as far back as Tom Adams, one of the things that he had lighted was that sometimes the Public Accounts Committee did not even meet within the 6 months requirement. So you have a committee that when things need to be laid before Parliament so that there is the transparency that is required is not functioning, one. And two, you have instances in which they are not functioning themselves.
But Mr. Marshall says to you that it is more important for us to get legislation that is specific to dealing with corruption than focusing on that aspect of the problem.
We are not objecting to that. What we are saying, legislation is part of the framework that is necessary. And the second thing that I have seen, and this is something that concerns me greatly, is even in instances when we have enacted legislation, the problem that I've seen occurring all the time is that we do not create the capacity and the structures that are necessary to cause that legislation to be enforceable. And so you will have an integrity commission. You can have all the structures under that legislation. And unfortunately, because the resources are not allocated to ensuring that these things function well, you can end up having the structures and nothing functions. I have seen it happen. We as politicians, we tend, and I've seen
I
the
need
last,
specifics.
Well, I can give you an example of in terms of some things that I've seen happen over the years in Barbados.
The DLP integrity bill.
Well, we're not, but that was a bill. So I'm not even mentioning that. But I can talk about, for example, the Employment Rights Tribunal. I can talk about the fact that within our justice system, we've tried to implement certain structures for alternative dispute resolution procedures. I have seen with, and that is why things are not functioning. So even in terms of when the UPP is talking about having the capacity, it is something that we cannot take for granted. The Auditor General has highlighted, he said, my office needs resources.
Yeah, you've spoken to that already. Now, let me bring back Integrity Group Barbados. You've heard three of the political parties speak to this issue. What are your thoughts? Chantal Monroe-Knight.
I think, you know, the conversation is interesting, and I, you know, thank the politicians that are here for, you know, the level of honesty in the discussion so far. So I think that for the integrity group, legislation is very important. But we also believe that legislation is just the beginning of the process, which is where Crystal spoke to. And that the issue of enforcement is very important because mm-hmm. when we look at the perception of Barbadians, we also note that, yes, we can have the legislation, but people are saying, will anything happen? Will people be sent to court? Will people be charged for this? So that the legislative aspect of it is important, but what also happens next? And also as well, David, what are the other kinds of supportive elements that need to be in place? So when we talk about legislation, we often look at this one act, the Prevention of Corruption Act. But we suggest that while we have the Prevention of Corruption Act, we also need to look at other pieces of legislation, such as the Freedom of Information legislation, because that is an important piece of the whole landscape as well. The extent, for instance, that we look at the issue of a contractor general and to make sure that the legislation that we have in place adequately covers the whole gamut of things, you know, under this issue of corruption. So I think that's one thing. I think, too, that we also need to be realistic in terms of how we handle the problem and to always be very careful to understand that we're talking about people's self-interest, right? So that you have a system that we are asking to actually set up systems to mitigate against itself. And people are not necessarily going to easily do that. And so that we have to ensure that we have processes in place, and I keep pointing to the Freedom of Information Act, where the public itself can also feel that they can also have a right to check, and it's not just left up to the politicians themselves as well. And so I agree then with the suggestion there that the impartiality, for instance, of the commission that is to be established under the ambit of the Prevention of Corruption Act is going to be extremely important to imbuing the public's confidence of the process, right, and trust in the system, David.
Let me get a comment also from Crystal Howell and Andy Armstrong, who are on the telephone line. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, Crystal.
I will say that I am pleased that there's been so much discussion about the Auditor General's report and the Public Account Committee, because for a very long time, these issues have been very quiet. And I think the impression has been that the issues are going to be raised in the report and no one's going to do anything about it, because when you look back for years, many of these issues have escalating, and there's been absolute, well, let me not say absolute silence, because there are these speaking on the issues, but I don't think they were heard or they were as effective as they would have liked. It is good to have multiple parties speaking on these issues. I do share the concern that it may not move beyond a discussion, and I will hope that bodies like Integrity Group Barbados would help to keep the pressure on, as well as the public, in terms of calling for more accountability and action. There are some concerns, rightly so. We have our Prime Minister possible bringing for allegations of bribery and corruption, and there were promises that were made, and yet you still have not seen anyone charged, you have not seen anyone brought up. And it is the concern that you steal skin of arm and you get sent to prison. There was a guy who was charged for stealing histles, and he got 8 months in prison. But when you hear of allegations of corruption for persons at a higher standing in society, you don't see anything happening. Or it seems as though the law is designed in a way to protect these persons, but even like the CLECO issue, it feels as though every angle that you would have gone at, no one was actually brought to account for something that you can clearly see where thousands of persons heard because of
corruption. Your line is terrible. It's just deteriorated a bit. I hope we can get it improved. But in the meantime, though, doesn't this all come back to the issue of the politics of it all?
Integrity. Are you group, any better now?
A little better. Yes, yes. Andy Armstrong wants
Andy
to comment.
Andy here as well.
Yeah.
Maybe I can jump in quickly.
Yeah.
You can have good laws and rules, and in fact, Barbados has a lot of laws and rules, and most of them have some flaws. But the problem is that if you're in power, you can frustrate those laws and rules. So
correct.
Until we have someone in a position of power, or some persons who, almost like a crusader, who make the issue of corruption really important and go after it and keep pushing the laws until they can get something to happen, then it's going to take a long time. I want to say I hadn't heard of Solutions Barbados is thought on the Defamation Act, but if it's really that skewed in favor of the culprit, then it definitely needs to be changed.
Okay, Dale Marshall?
I'd like to comment briefly again on the public accounts and the Auditor General. I think that the public might recollect that in the pre-1998 era, the Public Accounts Committee was controlled by the government. The Oinath administration recognized that that system was skewed against proper consultative processes. If it's controlled by the government, then of course you can't expect a government to look into its own failings. And we enacted a piece of legislation which gave the opposition for the first time the ability to convene and carry out meetings of the Public Accounts Committee without needing government support. In our recent suite of public accounts meetings, we recognize again that this whole issue of trust and transparency were absolutely connected. And for the Barbados Labour Party side, we insisted that public accounts meetings should be held publicly. That is the provision in the statute. The Democratic Labour Party representatives in the committee, they, hate to use your term, David, but they blocked it and then said that they were going to repeal the legislation. Since then, we've not been able to have any public accounts meetings. In England, public accounts committee meetings are shown live on television in Australia, in Canada, so that the entire populace who is interested have the ability to see and hear live what is being discussed. But because of the political machinations of the ruling party, the Public Accounts Committee was forced to do its stuff in secret. Now, that's not going to give people any confidence.
Can we expect change, therefore, in that regard?
Is
the BLP committed to change in that
regard? No change is required. The Act says that hearings shall be public unless the committee decides otherwise.
Yeah, but that all of this comes right back to the Barbadian culture, the Barbadian way. When we discuss corruption, integrity, Barbados may be dismissed by politicians as a bunch of middle-class Bajans who don't make contact with what people are saying on the ground. We have a country where people believe that when you are in power, you must look after yourself, whatever that implies. Mm-hmm. So for us to sit down here talking corruption at this level is one thing. Mm-hmm. Trying to get people to understand its full impact in such a way that it cannot be exploited by others is another. Where are we in that regard?
Well, we're not exactly where we need to be. And we have to talk a little more about the whole transparency issue. We are at the point now where, and certainly my Barbados Labour Party has committed to it, the public needs to be able to access information. We have to go past the days where a contract is awarded and nobody knows how much it is awarded for. Okay? Barbadians need to be aware of who is doing what project, for whom, and under what terms and conditions. When you shine the light of day on government's affairs, then it becomes very difficult to engage in any kind of corrupt activity at all. We commit to transparency. The last administration committed to transparency legislation. Unfortunately, they didn't pass it, but I'm not responsible for that. My party is committing to it and has committed to it. Now, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, but I will say this. Any political party that believes that as far as Barbados is concerned, it is business as usual, is a party that is completely delusional. My party recognizes that a higher standard is called upon for the political class. Barbadians are past the point of any patience. So we understand, and we are on the front lines, and we understand what is expected of us. Will we deliver? We will. We want to be elected so that we can demonstrate clearly to the people that we are going to honor our commitment. I think that history shows that the Democratic Labour Party has made promises that they've blatantly failed to follow in the last 10 years, but perhaps you don't want me to be.
Politically, what's in it for you?
I think that we will lose the ability to govern our country if people no longer have confidence in the political directorate. Confidence in the political directorate is not eroded only because they don't get roads or because they can't get buses. Confidence in the political directorate is eroded when people no longer trust the system. Confidence in the judiciary is eroded when people no longer trust the system. If they don't trust Parliament, again eroded. So we are at a crossroads. Barbados, we've done well for the most part, but we now have to brace ourselves and take our country forward. I am a parliament, well, I was a parliamentarian. I am a politician. And as I interface with my constituents every day, I am seeing a level of apathy towards the political process. And I think some of this apathy is as a result of the Barbadian electorate feeling that politicians are in it for themselves. I think it is a result of the Barbadian public feeling that politicians are not to be trusted. What is in it for me is that I am only going to be able to carry out my mandate, and my party will only be able to carry out its mandate if the system is restored. Now, I'm not asking anybody to go back to the days when Barbadians revered Grantley Adams and whatever he said was gospel. We're past that. We now have to live up to the standard that we preach. And the electorate that may have been so forgiving in the past, I guarantee you that it is not going to be forgiving as we go forward. And it is for that reason that commitments of this sort are vital to the Barbados Labour Party intention to run this country.
When we come back, I hope that we can link up with Adriel Brathwaite of the Democratic Labour Party.
VOB 92.9 FM wants you to enjoy the sweet life for 1 year. 1 year. One lucky VOB listener will win a year of easy living. Thanks to Esso. Energy lives here. Flow. Always connected. Always faster. KFC. Finger licking good. Laurie Dash Craft Shop. The original craft shop on Bay Street for quality products and the best prices. Accents and decor. Your space, your style. And LED illuminations. A brighter, greener future. Sweet life in VOB country.
Karaoke lovers in VOB country. Tune in this and every Thursday from 9:35 p.m. for the HQ Headquarters Sports Bar Karaoke Thursdays from HQ Sports Bar, Roebuck Street, opposite Police Sports Club. Listen in and sing along to your favorite tunes as participants carry their own key for fun and prizes galore. DJ for the night is DJ Triple X. Listen in for Karaoke Thursdays from HQ Sports Bar on VOB 92.9 FM from 9:35 p.m. this Thursday.
Barbados! Start your soca engines and rev it up with Bajan Soca Royalty. Starcom Network, in association with Crop Over City, presents Soca Ignition. Be in the Soca Kingdom at Bagatelle Great House on Saturday, June 2nd from 9 p.m. for the best of Bajan Soca Royalty. Sweet Soca King, RPB.
Oh yes, the water rocks.
Soca Queen, Allison Hine.
The dance on fire.
Multiple Sweet Soca, Party Monarch, and Road March King, Edwin Yearwood. People's Monarch, Sanctuary.
But if I drink too much.
Former Road March Kings, Lead Pipe and Sadis.
In a living less than me, I'm done. I'm feeling.
Reigning Party Monarch, Lil Rick.
I got the energy.
And the Prince of Bajan Soca, Piper Sounds. Plus the Trini Soca Kings, Voice, Ravi B, and the Soca King of New York, Lyrical. Tickets are available at $70 general and $300 VIP from Lucky Horseshoe, Bridgetown, Warrens, Worthing, and Bagatelle. CS Pharmacy in Bridgetown, A&B Music Supplies in Sheraton, Smart Store Lime Grove, Eddie's Supermarket in Sprightstown, Lil Munchkin in Sky Mall, Starcom Network on River Road, and online at www.ticketnation.bb. Soca Ignition, Saturday, June 2nd at the Soca Kingdom Bagatelle Great House.
It will be like a movie,
so get your tickets now.
Oh, yeah. I cheat even the prettiest girls all over.